In this episode, we speak with Michael Siegel, the founder and CEO of Skylight, a smart home startup that creates products used by millions of families around the world, including Skylight Frame and Skylight Calendar. The original aim was to create a device that made it easy to share photos with loved ones from anywhere in the world. Founded in 2014 as a side business, Skylight is a highly successful bootstrapped company. Michael was previously a vice president at Bessemer Venture Partners, where he championed investments in companies that solve high-impact problems for individuals. I'm your host, RJ Lumba. We hope you enjoy the show. If you like the episode, click to subscribe.
RJ Lumba is the executive chairman of Market Insight Media and the managing partner of Growth Cap. He is the host of Great Entrepreneurs, a podcast for driven entrepreneurs and business owners. Our podcast covers all topics related to the entrepreneurial journey, from ideation to execution to optimization and to reaping the rewards of a well-run business. In the minutes ahead, we'll share with you unique insights and tactics from some of today's most accomplished and inspiring entrepreneurs.
Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. It's a delight to be with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
I think an interesting part to kick off is how everything got started with the company. And from what I can tell, you and your co-founders met at Harvard Business School and came up with the idea. Is that how it came about?
More or less. Of course, the specific story is a little bit more unique. We were in business school. There were a number of us who were far away from our family. We were brainstorming ideas. And one of the ones that popped out was a device where everyone in the family, including ourselves, could magically beam photos over and they would pop up in our loved one's home. And when we pitched it to people, people's eyes would just light up. It was this magical reaction, which I, as a previously failed consumer entrepreneur, had never seen anything I had suggested creating elicit that sort of a reaction. So basically day one, I knew we had something. I didn't know what it was. And the only complexity of the story versus what you said is that those first five people, because it was actually six of us to start, it was a class project, they quickly dropped out. They weren't interested in pursuing this entrepreneurially long term. And I found another partner. He and I worked together for a great many years, and then he went off and did something else. And then I found another partner. So I don't want to suggest that it's this classic straight line of two co-founders link up and start a business. There was a number of reshufflings, and I was very lucky each time to find amazing people to work with.
And I think I noticed that you were working maybe in parallel as you were kind of getting the ball rolling with the company.
Yeah, that's right. As we graduated from business school, the business had launched, it had had a Kickstarter, it had done maybe $60,000, $70,000 of Kickstarter revenue, but there was no indication of how large it would or could become. So the natural conclusion for myself and my co-founder was, hey, let's run this nights and weekends. He went off and did a search fund and bought a business of his own. I was a venture capital investor. I was a vice president at Bessemer Venture Partners. And this was our hobby. I used to say some people run marathons in their spare time. We are building a startup in our spare time. And then 3-year overnight success, circa 2017, which was 3 years after the inception of the idea, it took off and suddenly it was doing a couple million of sales, profitable. Nobody was running it full time. And he and I looked at each other. We had a third partner as well at that point and just went, let's go for it. And so I left the VC path, though I still love my Bessemer colleagues, and the rest is history.
Fantastic. Not a typical path. So maybe for the benefit of our audience, let's talk a little bit about Skylight and what it is, what it provides.
Sure. So historically, Skylight made its name on one primary product, which was the Skylight Frame. Skylight Frame is one of the leading digital picture frames that is Wi-Fi connected, and everybody in the family can send photos from anywhere, anytime. So we really weren't engaged with that old 1.0 digital picture frame definition of, hey, here's a hunk of junk no one's going to use, and there's going to be four photos on repeat. Our mission from day one was put this in your loved one's home, and everyone can beam photos. It was a messaging platform. And from day one, dozens and dozens of photos per month were being sent to each device on average. So it was a very different behavior than the 2007, 2008 V1 of digital picture frames, to the point where we really reignited along with one or two other companies and pioneered this market to be what it is today, which is, I think, everyone's mom, dad, or grandma or grandpa have one. And now we're going to the next step or the next phase of the market where even folks in their 20s, 30s, and 40s are buying one for their own home. So that's what we do primarily historically. I will mention that arguably the most exciting thing going on right now is we spent 4 years in R&D developing what you can see behind me right here, the Skylight Calendar. This is a larger organizational device for families, primarily families with kids today. And it does links up all your family calendars, your Google, your Outlook. It does a chore chart for the kids and the adults, meal plans, to-dos, et cetera, a holistic organizational system. And this is really taking off. It's growing 4 times over last year. I can't share specific numbers, but they're getting pretty sizable in terms of revenue and customers. So we feel like we're pioneering the next billion-dollar smart home category with this one.
That's awesome. You know, it's somewhat counterintuitive because one might think, well, everyone carries a cell phone, you know, a smartphone where you could easily just have an app that could accomplish this. But there's something I think special and unique about the fact that you have a hardware device. Can you tell us a little bit about your thought process around going into hardware?
In the case of the Skylight Frame, it was always straight from the customer need. Yeah, we can all send photos through iMessage or WhatsApp to our families, but that's a fraction of the special showing of care and love and attention as having a beautiful device in their home that a photo will pop up on. It's just more fun. So it's a more intense or meaningful or novel way to share. And by the way, as the recipient, I might see it on my WhatsApp or iMessage if it comes through and then never see it again. Whereas photos are ambient, right? If you look around all of our houses, one of the things you'll see on the walls is our most important memories. They're not supposed to be hidden away on your phone's photo folder forever after you see them once. It's just not how it's supposed to be. So it naturally emerges from how people like to enjoy their photos that it should be this ambient, always on display. Calendar was a little less intuitive. Someone like myself who doesn't yet have kids was like, well, my partner and I can just link up our Google calendars, and we do. And you wouldn't be wrong for saying that. It turns out that once there are kids, the order of complexity and organizational chaos and mental load that the family's experiencing is so significant that most families, or at least a meaningful chunk, already have something to try to solve this. They have a whiteboard or the family calendar we all grew up in with like little notes inside of it on the refrigerator. So there's already a precedent that just having something on your phone is not enough. You need a visual central system in the home. It's not something I can really prove to someone who's not in that moment of their lives, but we now have many tens of thousands of customers that have validated that there is something special about having it ambient in your face where everyone in the family can see and interact with it.
Could you share with us a price point of the device? And like, because I'm curious about the decision for the consumer. And I do have kids. I've got one in high school, one in middle school. They're super busy. Our calendars are very complicated. But I'm curious, at what point does someone say like, okay, I'm going to buy this device?
Yeah, there needs to be realistically a certain amount of pain that you're going through to spend. Our larger calendar, a 15-inch screen, is a $299 device. There are occasional discounts, but that's not a small amount to spend. But when you think about it as the thing that can decrease the mental load on the parents, give the kids autonomy in doing their chores and navigating their activities, and de-risk that you're never again going to forget a soccer practice or an appointment, that's really quite valuable for parents. So they have to experience some of those frustrations first. So we see more of a pattern of people go through the I don't need anything phase to the I'm going to try an analog solution or a whiteboard phase. And then they throw up their hands and go, it's not working. A friend of theirs is like, the Skylight Calendar thing has been magical for us. And that's when they buy. But it's definitely a more considered purchase. You're not wrong about that.
And, you know, what drives you in building the company? Is it that you're so, you know, passionate about this particular product and the pain that you're solving? is it the desire just to build a big company, and you could have easily chosen a different product to build? Yeah. What is it that drives you?
It's not the second one. There's many great entrepreneurs building all sorts of interesting businesses, and I won't malign any categories, but there are many categories I would not personally get involved in. I am, and I think many of the people who work at Skylight are consumer entrepreneurs. What I mean by that is we love and we relish the mystery and idea maze of noticing a consumer problem or need, and over months or years trying to build products that solve that need. So philosophically, I think there is a space in the business world for companies that are good for humanity, good for humans, and good for business. It is non-trivial to find those opportunities, and that makes it all the more satisfying. The fact that we can say millions, literally millions, close to tens of millions of families are more closely connected today as we speak because of the Skylight frame. And we can say that many tens of thousands of parents feel less stress and are able to feel more love for family instead of the stress of what's going on. And kids can feel more empowered and autonomous instead of feeling kind of dejected and confused about what's going on in their own lives. That's really meaningful stuff, in our opinion. Some of the most meaningful that we've been able to think of. So if and when we do product 3 and 4, I can assure you that it'll also be something that solves a real heartfelt emotional problem in real human beings' lives.
That's excellent. And have you always directed your career along this path where you were seeking a role where you could make a difference in humanity in some way?
I would say so, yeah. You know, at Bessemer, my beloved last job before I became a CEO, it's really rather hard to invest, especially as a fund that size, in billion-dollar opportunity businesses that also happen to be good for the world. But I look at the portfolio I invested in with my colleagues, and it's companies like opioid treatment clinics to tackle the opioid epidemic, especially in rural areas, companies like Guild Education, which create a marketplace for workers at places like a Walmart to get their college degree while they're working. And those are both really good businesses as well as good for the world. So that intersection, that Venn diagram middle, was always where I found myself lighting up the most. And I would love to see more people focus in on that, because while it's not 80% or even 50% of the business opportunities that are out there, that generally most are a bit more mundane, there's a really meaningful chunk of important problems that can also be really good businesses. And I'd love to see more entrepreneurs tackle those.
That's fantastic. I noticed in your background that you've been passionate about entrepreneurship. What do you think that's drawn you to the path of being an entrepreneur, but then also supporting it and trying to kind of promote the involvement of entrepreneurs?
Well, when you look at how I grew up, it was a child of immigrants, very much a get straight A's and do all the academic and extracurricular things. So an algorithm probably might have predicted that I'd take a somewhat more conventional or less risky career path, right? You know, go to medical school, all the things my parents wanted me to do. But I don't know, you know, when I was in middle and high school, the books I would read would be the romantic books. It would be about glory and adventure and a meaningful life. And when I thought from first principles about what it meant to live a meaningful life, to me, that meant striving for impact, striving for adventure, never hesitating to go on the roller coaster if there's a really meaningful destination out of fear. So I think it was partly personality, partly, you know, some quirk of fate that led me down that path. But I even remember in business school, I would look at a lot of my classmates whom I loved, and, you know, they thought about the world in a different way. They wanted a less risky job with, you know, the potential to be the CEO of a big multinational company one day, you know, CEO of Coke or Pepsi. Like, cool. Like, good for you. The world needs those, and that's an important role to play as well. But the innovator, the romantic, the builder, the creator, the artist, those were the identities that aspirationally I hoped there'd be glimmers of that in my life. It's not for everybody, but that's who I wanted to be.
And do you see building Skylight into a much bigger company with multiple products, maybe other business lines?
Absolutely. I think at this point, I think of us as an innovation factory, as a company that happens to make smart home products. The most joyful part of my job, and I think that for everybody in the company, is identifying a need, doing the hard, non-intuitive work with real humans to figure out how to serve that need, building the product, having people hate the product, rebuilding it so people love it, rinse and repeat. Like that, I mean, it's kind of a sacred thing to pull out of thin air something new in the world that matters and makes an impact on people. So if we can just keep doing that in various categories, that'll be a very satisfying soul and purpose for the company. And by the way, I'll just plug that I think both of our existing categories could be 10x bigger. Memories in the home, I think in 10 years, everybody or close to everybody will have some sort of digital ambient presence for their most important memories. And I think many, if not most, families will have something like the Skylight calendar organizational system to run their families and reduce that mental load. So I think they could both be billion-dollar opportunities in their own right. But then knowing us, knowing myself, product 3 and 4 probably aren't too far around the corner either.
And how would you describe the culture of your company in order to accomplish, you know, the things you've accomplished and then to do more? I imagine you must have built a solid foundation, and that foundation, you know, probably starts with you and the other leaders of your company. But how would you describe the culture and your intention around the culture?
Yeah, we have 3 cultural values, and we've had these for 4 or 5 years: rigor, care, and autonomy. And by the way, side note, every company's culture kind of starts to sound the same. The hard part is living it every day and having the hard conversations. But to comment on the values, rigor means let's be really smart. Let's think deeply. Let's not be satisfied with the easy answers. Let's not be afraid to argue. I think companies where those rules are not met become pretty stale from an idea perspective. Care is the flip side of rigor. You know, some companies go really hard on, you know, we got to get to the right answer, and they end up being full of jerks who are mean to each other, which is, in my view, not a really productive or healthy or energy-giving way to run a business. Like fundamentally, good things happen, and creation, entrepreneurial creation, happens when people are filled with energy. And I think a culture where, you know, people are just constantly attacking each other under the guise of rigor or, you know, we got to achieve XYZ goals are very draining. So we really spend time on emotions and open communication and how to care for one another while being very ambitious. And the tension between rigor and care, because they are in tension, if we balance them right, it enables autonomy, which ultimately is the lifeblood of any entrepreneurial company. If we can't hire people who do way more and are enabled and allowed and empowered to do way more than the average person at the average company, there's no way we'd be able to do what we do and have our business be the size that it is with only 30 or 35 employees. It just wouldn't be possible. So autonomy is the heart of it. And it's really hard. You know, every manager goes through their micromanaging phase. Many don't get out of it, but we really practice, how do we empower our troops? How do we get the right humans into every role such that they're growing and becoming the person they want to be and will give that energy back to the company in terms of their output?
Are you a hybrid workforce? Are you in-person, remote? How are you set up?
Yeah, we've always been hybrid even before COVID. We're extra super hybrid now where there's of those 35 or so people, some are in LA, some are in SF, some are around the country. I won't lie, it's hard. It's hard because brainstorming, culture building, relationship building, fixing problems are all 5x more effective across a table or in a circle than over a Zoom meeting, hands down. At the same time, you get the reward that you can hire a higher quality of person if you enable them to work remotely. So the hybrid we've come up with is a couple days in the office for the people who are in our main hubs. And then 3 times a year, full all hands in person, which is expensive, but important. And the smaller teams do get together a few times a year as well. And frankly, I think we could do even more every time we get together in person. The ROI on that is so clear and obvious to the people in the room that I don't know how folks delude themselves into thinking truly fully remote is as effective.
Right. And remind me, did you bring in outside capital? I imagine you did.
We actually didn't. We were very lucky from day one to be profitable. It was largely a function of it's hardware. So you take actual money on the first order. And it was hardware that people want, say, by which I mean the cost of acquisition, especially for the frame during holiday seasons, was really low. And so we actually were able to make enough margin to fund our own operations. We added to that a subscription business model in 2018, which juices the profitability further. So we're bootstrapped and profitable and no specific plans to change that. It's kind of nice to have the freedom.
Amazing. What would you say is the biggest challenge in scaling the company?
You know, it's always team and strategy, right? And they play together. Strategy right now, the frame market's getting more competitive. What do we do about it? How do we cement our leadership position? Hard question, very much like MBA case study type of question. We don't know all the answers. The calendar is on a tear. So how do we not screw that up? We feel like we're on a rocket ship to a $1 billion opportunity. How do we just maximize that? What are the right things? Like, how does one even build a new brand and a new category from nothing to something that every parent and ultimately every home needs to have? Like, I don't know, we've never done it. So strategically, there's a gajillion questions, but really then it comes down to team. And just, even though it's so much easier hiring great people now than it was 2 years ago, it's still really hard and we take our time with it. And we have a number of roles that we've been hiring for months because the bar is really high to join our little company here. You know, we want someone who preserves the culture and can really be this entrepreneurial hero in their division. So both of those things, strategy and team, make scaling challenging.
And then along those lines, if there's one piece of advice that you could give to an entrepreneur, maybe in the earlier phase of building a company, what would that be?
Yeah, and product market fit will cover a lot of sins. So I would translate your question to how do you get product market fit? Well, number one, I would say most people need a co-founder, even if it's two business people. You need someone to help you think and get out of your head and be agile. You need the right team so that you can iterate quickly. I think the thing that kills every company is ultimately running out of cash. And the faster you iterate, the more shots on goal, the more you'll learn and the more likely that you'll come to something that people actually want. And then finally, just give yourself enough time. You know, in past ventures, after a year, even though I thought I could go on, subconsciously, it wasn't the point in my life where I could really dedicate 2 to 3 years to really find product market fit. So if a smart person does those three foundational things, they have the right partner, they set themselves up with enough time to iterate. And then I guess the last thing I say is they're directionally working on something that fills them with energy that they want to work on for 2 to 3 years, even if it's the worst pain that they've ever experienced professionally, as it sometimes is. If you do all those things, you're liable to find something that works. But it's shocking how many companies, most I would say, that start up, break one or all of those rules that are foundational.
Right. Okay, last two questions. Can you tell us about a person who has had a profound influence on you?
Well, the maybe cop-out answer is, I alluded to it earlier, I come from an immigrant family. My parents left the Soviet Union as refugees in the 80s, Jewish refugees who had to make a life from scratch here in Philadelphia. And so I grew up watching them just work their tails off. And it wasn't just a work ethic that I got from them. It was a sense of humility and gratitude that then led me to want to succeed, to give to the world. Like, as I think about having children of my own, God willing, they'll have an easier life than I did. And I had an easier life than my parents did. But something gets lost, I think, in that process, because just seeing my parents do what they did, this heroic feat of starting anew, I think shaped me to be who I am today.
Awesome. Last question. Can you tell us about a charity cause or other endeavor that you're passionate about?
I'll forego the cop-out answer, which I mentioned earlier in the conversation, which is I sincerely and ardently believe that our company is creating way more value for real human beings than just giving to a charity, because we're sustainable, we're profitable, and we're creating value for every dollar that we bring in. Otherwise, I would say my approach to those sorts of things is largely local community oriented. I think it's always felt like a bit of a cop-out to me to just throw money over the fence to an amorphous organization for them to do with what they see fit. I would rather, you know, help somebody on the street corner here in Philly who's struggling, have a 20-minute conversation with them, give them some money, wish them luck, give them that little bit of support that they need to change the course of their day. I think that human connection is missing for a lot of us. I think we travel in our little bubbles with our families and our homes. We barely talk to our neighbors. So my approach, it's not a cause, it's not a charity. It's just try to help every single person where I identify an opportunity to help them, whether that's a friend or a total stranger on the street, whether it's with money or just time or a bit of love. That's my approach.
Fantastic answer. Well, Michael, I want to thank you again for taking the time. I know our audience will find this very insightful. Thank you.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.